Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. It's a Sunday strategy session. Going to be one of my last startup drafts of the year, so I figured I'd run it down. Unique build. Unique build. I've come out of this draft. I'm still in the middle of it, so I've come out of it with four 2022 first-round picks. This is like the second league in this year where I've racked up four first-round picks. It's not necessarily what I intended. I will say, when you get into drafts in August, I think the later you go in the off-season, the weaker the competition is when you're playing in a like a public league. So this is my only safe league startup of the year. And I think that when you get in August, I think it does attract a different crowd. It shouldn't be surprising that the January crowd, or the, I guess they started them in like May, but whenever they started their drafts, I know it was really late. Like they were, the people that play in March and April, they're your hardcore people. They're going to be probably better in terms of, you know, playing more dynasty. And the other thing too that you have to remember at this time of the season, and now we're getting into training camp, and you know, it's becoming real. It's not just a theoretical exercise that people want to win, right? You're kind of getting in that redraft mode. You're kind of getting in that thing. Like if you can, I think this time of year has a really fertile ground for acquiring future picks, being, you know, really hunting upside elite roster construction with the future picks. I think it's very possible. And I think you can move around the board in ways that you can't in other times of the year. So I've been involved with five trades, three of them acquired future first. I also acquired a future second, which was gave away a future second too at a point. So I'm neutral there. But yeah, I mean it's definitely an interesting time. And you know, so I'll sort of walk through some of the stuff and we'll talk about it a little bit here. So I drew 106. So again, safe leagues, super flex, two PPR for tight end. That becomes relevant very much later on. And so I drew 106 and I said, you know, I don't have a ton of Mahomes in my player shares. I might be, you know, like neutral-ish thereabouts. It's just, you know, I didn't have much of him. I've played a lot more since he's been, you know, a lot of my Superflex drafts have been since he's been really good. So it wasn't like I was able to acquire, him in a, in rookie drafts or anything like that. Like a lot of my Superflex team builds have come when he's been, you know, who he is. So it's been definitely a different time. And again, when you look at some of the older builds, like I had a lot of Kamara when he was young, but now I don't have that much Kamara. He's still sort of on those ones and I've traded him or whatever. Like I've never really been in on him since he's been expensive. The same thing with Mahomes. I wasn't in on him early. You can either trade for him now, or I see a startup draft, especially when I'm in like the mid round. If I can do it without giving away future assets, like I think it's worth the price because A, I want to up my exposure, and B, I think he's like the best super flex asset by quite a bit. You know, I like Dak. Like, don't get me wrong, I really like Dak. But like he does have, like we have to have questions about him, right? Like he's currently not throwing live balls. Like we don't know what that is. Again, if we sort of look back in a year, can that look really bad? Like, yeah, but with the information that we know now, like there's some level of concern with him. I think he plays week one is probably fine, but I don't have any of those concerns with Mahomes, right? And so if I can go from cheap Dak in a theoretical sense, because I don't know if I can get him at 106, all the way up to 101 for not that much, right? That's something that I've done. I think I've done it maybe twice in startup drafts this year. I do think it warrants at least consideration, because you'd want to get exposure. And if think about what you'd have to do in an existing league to get them. You know, I think that's the other thing. So I give up my 106 and my 207, so my first two picks. I move up to 101, and I get back 612 in return. Again, I don't think the difference from 207 to 612 hurts. I don't think it's that super steep. You know, if you sort of look at what you're getting in that range, like, it's Tyreek Hill was really the player that I gave up. And honestly, the person that I traded got almost the exactly perfect outcome. He got Prescott at quarterback 5, and he got Tyreek Hill at wide receiver 3. Like, it's kind of tough to beat that. And so honestly, if I could go back, you know, if you could give me that, you know, what would I think? I'm not sure. I ended up trading that pick as well a couple times too. So I ended up trading out of, actually I take that back. I actually took Tom Brady with the pick. So it ended up being Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady for Dak Prescott and Tyreek Hill. So I don't know. I think, like, if you had told me in advance it would have been Prescott and Hill, maybe I would have stayed. You know, if you told me in advance it was going to be like Kyler Murray and Hill, like, I probably would have traded it. So, you know, should Prescott have maybe been there for me at 6? Like, what would I sort of thought of? I don't know. Someone took Herbert ahead of Prescott. Like, that would have been suboptimal. Again, someone took Murray ahead of Prescott. The top 5 quarterbacks that go off the board, obviously Mahomes, Allen, Murray, and then it's Herbert is quarterback 4, and then Prescott's quarterback 5. Again, could Lamar Jackson have been in there? If Burrow's in there as well. You know, Lance made the first round. You know, so, and Lawrence was actually at 107. So I don't know, like, if it had been a flip flop, if Prescott goes 2, it's the right pick. Totally. It's the right decision. I still don't think it's, I paid too much for Mahomes in hindsight. You know, could I hindsight myself to death? Absolutely. I think the process was right, and I'd do it again. You know, I'd do it again. I think that's a place where you can get a cheap Mahomes share, and I'm down to do it. So I wait a long time, and this becomes a habitual thing that I wait a long time in this draft. I end up getting, I get to 306, and at 306, I didn't really love what was there. And so if you sort of look at the board, 306, basically, you know, Adams was gone. Derrick Henry was gone. You know, it was Waller, Kelsey. I thought there was a chance that they'd slide to me. They all went Kittle. It went off Kittle, Waller, and Kelsey. They went off right at the 2-3 turn. Pitts had gone off in the early second. So there wasn't really a tight end premium to attack there. At the point, like, it would have been, like, I probably could have went Rodgers at quarterback if I wanted to. But I said, you know, I can potentially wait. And, you know, I've got a fourth rounder. I had a couple fourth rounders. At that point, Rodgers had been falling. I wasn't sure how early he would come up. But I said, I think I'm going to have basically 2 fourth rounders, my own and what I end up trading to. And I said, you know, I think I'm going to get a shot at Rodgers or Watson, sort of my operating premise. And so I traded 306 in my second to slide down to 412 and get a future first. Again, this broke bad. This ultimately broke kind of bad. Rodgers goes right after my pick. The guy that traded up 4, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That actually doesn't hurt me too terribly in terms of the pick quality. I don't think he's going to, you know, he didn't take Rodgers, for example, that could really shift the pick quality, I thought. But Rodgers goes off a couple picks later. And then Watson's actually a third round startup pick in this, which is just early. You know, I figured I'd have a couple extra fourths and I could do it there. But, you know, that's kind of how it broke, you know. So that's okay. As now I'm sitting there at 407. And the one that hurts really is Hockenson goes right in front of me at 406. So he goes right in front of me at 406, and I'm kind of like, ugh, like Eckler gone, he had gone. 407's there. And I had some guys that I had in mind, like Swift was there. I thought, you know, I thought about Swift, ETN, but I kind of thought at this point I might hit tight end. And I had 412 coming back. So I had in mind Andrews and Fant. I said, you know, let's see. Offer comes in. It's for me to move from 407 back to 410 for a future second. And at that point, I'm kind of like, you know, like, I don't know if I can split hairs well enough here. And there's like a tier of guys. Like, again, I could take any of the guys in this range. I could take Swift. I could take ETN. I could take Andrews, Fant, Stafford, if I want to. Like, there's a whole range of guys that I felt really comfortable taking. Heck, I'd take Keenan Allen in that range too. Like, if so, it felt pretty flat-ish. And, you know, I don't have a particularly strong take when there's guys that I have together. Like, I'll let the other guy take the pick, and I'll leave myself some options. And so that's what I did. I moved back from 407 to 410 for a future second. And I joke about, I say this, and I say it somewhat jokingly, but it's also serious. Like, I don't think I'm that good at picking players that within that range, it's like not worth a second to move back. You know, it's like the NFL. You know, we see these studies over and over again about how teams that trade back, and you know, the difference between a couple of picks in that range, like, it's almost always worth trading back. I take that to heart. And I think that this is when you see these things on Twitter and you see really, you know, these bold takes about these players, like, you got to realize, like, there's a lot of uncertainty in there. And so I like to leave myself lots of options. And again, if I need to address something later on, I've got the war chest to do it. I think drafting, trying to draft really high floor guys where they're, you know, the median's really, really high for players, I think it's very helpful. And then, you know, you're benefiting from, you need to benefit there from variance, right? Leave yourself multiple outs. And so, so that's really what I did. I moved back a couple picks, and Swift goes off. That I would have liked him to fall to me. ETN goes off. Probably would have liked him to fall to me too. But Andrews falls, and I said, you know, I can take Andrews, and I feel really good about that. So I take Andrews. He's tight ends. He is tight end for me. He's tight end six off the board. And I said, you know, like, that's really good. I want to sort of get into more of this really aggressive on the tight end build. You know, Tyler had come on. We talked about a draft that he did. I do think it makes a lot of sense to try and get aggressive at the position. So I'm trying out some new things, and I figured I'd go there. So he's tight end six. Pick goes by, and I've got a one pick gap there. Someone takes Stafford in between, and I say, you know, that's fine. Like, I'll take Fant. And so I take Fant there, and I got two top seven tight ends. By way of reference, Andrews finishes his tight end six last year, and Fant finishes tight end eight. So Andrews had 228 points. Fant had 211. By way of reference, that would have been wide receiver 18 for Andrews. It would have been wide receiver 25 for Fant. It would have been running back 9 for Andrews and running back 11 for Fant. So if I could just stick Fant in the flex, I'm basically getting, you know, it's essentially like Mike Davis last year, right? In terms of all that, like, huge warp stuff that happened, like, I'm getting that. I'm actually getting Antonio Gibson, right? So when you just think about, like, that level of production, I'm just going to throw that in the flex and sort of set it and forget it. It gives me a really, you know, when you sort of look at this, like, I'm building in a pretty high floor in terms of what my team can accomplish. I have a really high floor and high ceiling with Mahomes, and then I've got a really good tight end, one with Andrews, and a good, ends up probably being a weekly flex play for me there with Fant. And again, I'm sort of adding up, and I've gone back and I looked at what some of the playoff scoring was in some of these leagues from like last year. And you just take a peek and see where teams are through week 13, which would have been when it was the end of the regular season, and you sort of get an idea of the points. And so you take a look back and see, you know, but 150 points, probably pretty good in terms of like averaging that, you're going to probably be in the playoffs. Listen, if you're up in 160, you know, or north of that, you're going to be probably pushing like a buy, something like that. So I go back and I look at this and I say, all right, last year, again, this isn't the end all be all predictor, but last year, Mahomes 29, Andrews he had a little over 29. Andrews 16.2, Fant 14.1. You sort of add that up, you're 60. You're basically 40% of the way there. And I haven't drafted a running back. That assumes no human hand grenade blow-ups, right? That assumes I haven't gotten any receiver stuff yet. If you just keep putting in players around that, I'm starting 10 guys. I'm starting presumably two quarterbacks at super flex, but I've got one quarterback at a super flex spot, two running backs, three receivers, one tight end, and two additional flex spots. So, you know, just already in there, I've got about 60 or so points. You know, maybe we say that's, you know, high 50s, something like that. We project it out on an average thing. And then all of a sudden you're, you know, and you've got bye weeks and stuff, but I'm just sort of putting together a rough outline of about what my team would look like. Then I got 6-9 quarterbacks and another quarterback, and I basically got to get, you know, if I can get 100 points out of them, I'm really looking good for this year. And, you know, that you assume like, hey, in this format, if I can get 25, you know, if I need 100 and I get 25 out of the quarterback spot, that leaves me six spots needing, you know, about 75 points. And, you know, we're looking at like 12 points per game, something like that, right? That's about going to get me there. And so this is going to give me some good shots, right? That's kind of how I look at this. I'm sort of building this. It's non-traditional, but again, I can sort of get to, you know, can I get to whatever, if I need 25 points per game at the running back spot, can I get there with a couple human hand grenades if I need it? Or, you know, can I get there with some situational starters this year and sort of figure it out longer term, but sort of in the medium term, in the short term, in the medium term, figure it out by piecing it together and sort of building roster efficiency. I think I can do that. And this sort of allows me to do it. Again, I've got, at this point, I've got, you know, I've got a future first, and I've got I'm neutral on seconds now too. And right, so I can sort of address the positions if I need it. We'll sort of talk more as I go along here about how this ends up unfolding. So that goes on. We get into the fifth round, and again, I'm at 506, and so it's fine. I'm sort of moseying on along, and I'm sort of being really flexible. You know, Keenan Allen's available at that point. You know, there's a lot of other guys. I mean, Keenan Allen probably would have been my pick if I was sort of looking at it. But again, there's Allen Robinson, there's Evans. I've got a lot of different options. Jacobs was there, but I said, you know, I can be flexible at the running back position. It's fine. Ultimately, I get the offer of someone wants 506, and they'll give me 811 and a future first. And again, at this point, I say, you know, what can I get? A first and another top 100 asset for Josh Jacobs right now? Probably not. Can I get a first and another top 100 asset for Keenan Allen right now? Probably not. It'd sort of be my hunch. You know, can I look at this and, you know, maybe Ayuk I could do that with? You know, I'm sort of looking around like, who would I stay and pick for? You know, that's kind of my thought. You know, can I get a first and another top 100 asset for Trey Sermon? Right, that's who goes a few picks later, or Devonta Smith, right? All those guys, and I'm just like, I don't think I can do that. So at this point, you know, the quarterback position, it has flattened out. You know, Zach Wilson had just gone, so you got Baker, you've got Tua, like that's kind of the range of the position. I said, you know what, I'm taking the future picks again, and at that eight range, I'm thinking to myself, hey, that's probably a wide receiver, or that's a running back core player. That's kind of what my thought was. A running back contributing player for this year, probably. Like, that's probably what my intuition was as I was doing this deal. So I go from 506 to 8, 11 and get a future first. So that's my third future first, my own, the one from the trade down from the third to the fourth round. And now I trade down from 506 to 811 for a future first. I get into the sixth round and I say, okay, like now there's, and again, I have two six rounders because I got this, I got 612 from earlier. And I got 607, which was my own natural pick. Jacobs goes at 605. Tua and Baker were already gone. You know, Sermon's gone. Jalen Hurts had fallen to 512. Like maybe he would have been interesting if he'd gotten there, but he doesn't. And I'm basically left with what I think is the last multi-year running back that I'm pretty convinced of in Miles Sanders. And I don't love Miles Sanders. I have some questions about maybe the ceiling and all that. But listen, he is running back at this point. He's running back 22. And, you know, Chris Carson goes right after him. But then you're looking at what is a pretty steep drop off in my mind. Michael Carter's thereafter, Kareem Hunt. In terms of upside, I think Miles Sanders has more. Daryl Henderson is there as well. Like, all right, maybe he does. But again, I'm not sure. I'm not convinced on a multi-year window. Montgomery had gone off a round plus ahead of him. Again, I like to look at those things and sort of say, hey, you know, in terms of profiles, similar stuff. Like, I do think Montgomery's better, but there's a round gap opening up. I think that's something that we can definitely hit on. So I take Miles Sanders and I say, all right, now I've got at least a plug in there running back. I think he probably beats the average points that I need for me to make a playoff run, and lock him in. So I lock him in. This is the 6-12 spots. This one that I think drew some interest. So Lockett goes off. Judy goes off. Not that I probably would have been in on Judy, but I may have taken Chris Carson there if Carson had fallen to me. But I get to 6-12 and I kind of say, listen, I want to do this, compete this year. And I've already gotten two future firsts. How do I sort of compete this year? How do I do both? Well, I know I'm going to backfill with productive wide receivers. So that's fine. And I've got some opportunities for the wide receivers coming. I think I can sort of do a running back build. Well, what would sort of give me a really high-end shot in the arm? And Tom Brady's sitting there. And I just keep going back to Brady, and I think, like, hey, I've got future picks I can address the position with. Like, there's guys later on that I like. I can take Derek Carr. Heck, I could take Goff. Like, I can figure out a way to fill in the position cheaper so that way I've got warm bodies behind Brady if he does retire, if he totally falls off this year. But the upside's pretty compelling. And you've got so many weapons there. He looked pretty good last year. And, like, he's got top six well within his range of outcomes. I think that's what he's projected at Football Guys. And you just think, like, there could be a pretty big amount of scoring there. I think he was second in terms of passing attempts last year behind only Matt Ryan. So you sort of look at all these things, and I'm like, all right, this is pretty interesting. So I take him over Cousins, which was an interesting reaction from some folks in the group me chat. Like, I actually took him over Mac Jones as well. But listen, I said, this is a team that I think I can actually win now with, even though it looks totally different than you might otherwise see some of these teams building win now. Like, I think I have outs for this year, and one of them is really having a high-end quarterback. So I go Brady. We'll see how it works out. In hindsight, you know, had I realized some of the offers I was going to get later on to move around, maybe I wouldn't have done this. Maybe I would have, taken someone that has maybe more longevity and built that way. But at the time, I see myself as being able to build a really strong core. And I think, you know, listen, I've got plenty of options here. I still have a team. Like, I think I've got successful picks early on. I haven't taken a ton of risk. I've got guys that can be productive now, and I have longevity in terms of especially my top three guys, and I've got three future firsts. So, like, I've got multiple outs here. And so I think Brady's one of these where I think he's almost like a luxury pick to some degree, which might be odd this early, but I think he's a guy that I can invest in And even if it fails, even if I don't get all the way there, like, it's not going to sink me, right? This isn't going to set me years behind. The other thing too, when you sort of look in this range, you know, I've been doing some of the advanced metric workup. And when you just look at some of the quarterback stuff, like, it is a really, you know, it's a big, there's like, if you can get a guy that can really make a difference, you know, the odds that you hit on someone for big, big significance, like later on in the position, it's not that high, you know? And so when you look at him, like at 22, the odds of a quarterback going off RDP 22 and hitting one warp in year one is 23%. And so when you think about that, you're like, wait, like, all right, if Brady does that, like if Brady finishes top 10, he's definitely doing that in Superflex. You know what I mean? And so I think if he stays healthy, I think he's going to do that. So I'm already beating the pick in terms of that. And I think it's, you know, I think he's got, if you sort of look at the odds that they finish with two warp, which is really low, I think there's probably somewhere in the middle. Like if we set a 1.5 threshold, I think he could definitely get to there. I don't know if he gets all the way to two warp, because that's asking for basically like a top three or so finish. But it's a 1% shot. I think he's got much more than a 1% shot to do that. But again, the other thing is like, if I do a Cousins, if I do any of those guys, like, it's not that, I'm not really like moving the needle in terms of expectation all that much higher, is sort of my thought, like even over the long term as I study these numbers. So I'll take the immediate shot and then we'll see. Again, if he's playing well and my team's not successful, I can figure out a way to unwind that pick, get myself some different assets and move on. But that wasn't, I'm not throwing in the towel on this year, and I've got basically what I think is essentially the last major chip that can move a team this year. Is kind of how I saw this pick. That's going to start like week one. So that was sort of my premise, and that's what I went with. So a seventh round comes along. I take Robert Woods, you know, wide receiver 25. He's my wide receiver one. I think he's got top 12 well within his range of outcomes. Perfect. I get to round eight. So it's 807. It's my natural pick at 807. And Derek Carr's there. And again, so let me give myself some options. He's the last guy I feel super great about. Like, I think he's probably better than given credit for. You know, you have Goff going after that, but Ryan was off the board. Then you've got Roethlisberger, Wentz is there. You know, Daniel Jones is actually already off the board. So at this point, I'm like, all right, Carr is a value because of guys that I think can do it at a high-end level for a while. Like him and Goff, when you just look at their numbers, like Carr's just a much better player. I think he's got more outs. Like he could be a franchise starter. I'm not sure if Goff's got that. You know, after this couple-year window there, there's just so much smoke to the fact that there's limitations there. I think there's limitations with Carr, but I think that he probably pushes a higher range of outcomes than Goff does. So I go Carr. And now I got three quarterbacks. And again, if I want to move off Brady or something like that, I've got the ability to probably do so in the nearish term. I'd have to do it, but I still leave myself with some core guys. And you know, maybe I don't want Carr as my quarterback too long term. But again, I've got picks I can sort of address. At 8:11 comes to me, and I'm sitting there. I'm kind of looking at Cooper Kupp, some other guys that are there that are interesting. You know, that I could potentially go after. Mike Gesicki was one of them, but I sort of in this range thought like, hey, there's a bunch of guys that look a lot the same. Like, let me sort of see where the board falls and I'll be like, I can not necessarily kick the can, but I can be sort of open to, you know, taking, it's a large tier of guys. And I don't feel super great about Gesicki over a guy like Ingram, for example, or Higby for that matter, or heck, even Logan Thomas, right? Like, if there's a gap there, right, I'll just take the later guy. And so that's what I traded down from 8:11 to 11:02, pick up a future second. I probably would have taken Kupp there. if I didn't trade down, but got the ability to trade down. Again, it's largely within the same range of tiers. And, you know, for example, like I could have taken in the 11th round, like Tyler Boyd, for example, was there. And is he that much different than like Cooper Kupp? I mean, maybe there's some upside difference there. But in terms of, you know, hitting a broad target, you know, Corey Davis is down there too. Like, I think all of those things, there's like plenty of options there that I could have went with that maybe not aren't super meaningfully different than Cooper Kupp. And I wasn't necessarily sure I wanted to have Woods and Kupp on the same roster, you know, so that was it too. So I end up taking a future second to move down. And then I end up hitting in the 10th round. I get Evan Engram. So he's now my tight end three. So again, this locks me in. By way of reference here, Evan Engram finishes as tight end 12 last year, 204 points, wide receiver 28, running back 13. So again, you're starting basically in the flex. You have a hard time beating that. Again, there's different asymmetries that go on with the running back position where you can sort of spot those maybe top 12 opportunities in a one-off setting. You know, if there's a Raheem Mostert game, for example, where Sermon's out, they're a home favorite, like you start Raheem Mostert and he can post that, like he can beat that for sure. He might even be projected to beat it. But I sort of have a warm, you know, 13 point per game guy to throw in there. And again, I'm still leaving myself in contending range ahead of the clock in terms of my point projection. So I put him there. Again, it gives me flexibility. Listen, if I want to trade Fant, if I want to trade Andrews, I'm not taking a huge hit at tight end. It's fine. Listen, if Engram goes off, like I still think there's plenty of in his range of outcomes that like, he's the best receiver on that team. Like Barkley hasn't played. Galladay's hurt. Kadarius Toney can't even dress for games. And like all of a sudden we've got Evan Engram. Like it looks actually pretty interesting. So if we were to sort of compile a list of guys that, hey, he could lead his team in targets, like he's probably on the list. You know, I think Gesicki might be on that list too. You know, you sort of look around, like he's probably on the list. It's not super big. You know, I'd make it a pretty wide range, but he's only one of, I don't know, 10, 12 guys that you'd probably put on a list like that. So I think that's an interesting spot there for him. Again, he's tight end 15 at that point, and that's behind guys like, you know, Jonnu Smith, for example, who I don't think has that in his range of outcomes. You know, Cole Kmet's going right there too. He's going after Robert Tonyan. You know, so he goes right after Higbee, who maybe I would have taken over him. You know, so those are the guys in the range. I mean, to me, like that's a pretty solid range to take him. You take him over Kmet, you take him over Hooper. And, you know, he fit perfectly for me. And I think I'm getting a couple spots to tight end in terms of discount. So that's 10.07. I get to 11.02, which is a pick I traded down to. I take Mike Davis. So I trade basically 8.11, which might have been Kupp, you know, might have been someone like that. And I get Mike Davis in a future second. So I fill in a running back two spot, or maybe it's a flex spot. We'll see how the team builds out. And ultimately, like I've got, I think, at least a win upside in his range of outcomes. And he's already sitting out preseason games. We have a good feeling. We kind of know what the pecking order there is, and we know what Arthur Smith can do with running backs. So I like it. I ultimately like it quite a bit. So, and again, he's going behind, like he goes behind Cam Akers. Right. He goes behind Ronald Jones. He goes behind James Robinson. He goes behind Chase Edmonds by a couple rounds. Like, I think he has the ability to change, you know, to really be a difference maker where I'm not sure any of those guys do. Does he have a lower floor? Sure. Could, like, he be out of the league in 8 months? I mean, theoretically, yes. But I think that he was a really good pass catching back last year, a really good pass catching back. And you sort of look at that stuff and it's like, he's quote good. And so I'll take him there and let, that's a pretty nice one to fall to me. Here's where it gets interesting. So that's 1102 and now I get to 1106 and I'm sitting there and I'm like, all right, like what am I going to do? Well, I get an offer that comes in and it's pretty crazy at first blush. I end up tweaking it a little bit, but it calls for me to give up 1106, 1207 and 1306 for 1808. And it ended up being a couple of really late round picks initially. I put it in the Analytics Dynasty chat because I was just interested to see sort of what people thought. There's a lot of moving pieces and I'm just sort of like, huh. I'm like, I'm getting a future first in a range where I'm not going to get, you know, where I'm going to be hard pressed to trade one of these guys for a future first. And at the same time, I'm moving back, but the odds aren't terribly different. Like there's not super steep drop-offs here in terms of ranges of players, right? It's not like there's a massive gap here. Like we're kind of dealing with largely the same range of players in terms of odds. You know, it might be, you know, 10% different, something like that, between the 1106 and the 1808, something like that. But it's not huge, right? You're not taking a catastrophic loss in terms of implied odds. So the offer was to basically give my next three picks, my 11th, 12th, and 13th for these picks. Everyone's like, do it. Like you're getting a chance at a high-end core asset, like do it. So I restructured a little bit. It was to get back 1808, 2105, and then 1408. So I'd basically double up in those rounds. And he accepts, gives me a future first for that, which is interesting. You know, I'd never done a trade like that. And I'm, again, this is another one where I'm just waiting there forever. For it to pick. But again, sometimes trades come at you different ways. And again, if I knew this was going to sort of be where I was going to be with the Brady pick, maybe I don't do Brady. But again, now I have Brady and it's sort of, maybe on the other hand, it allows me to do this. I don't know. I still think, you know, when you look in this range, like, are these players going to make a massive difference to you? You know, are they, and we'll talk about a couple of players I get later on that I think can actually make a difference for me. Like I still have guys that I can sort of plug in the lineup, thankfully, because I don't have a third receiver yet. But in that range, I'm looking at like guys like Curtis Samuel, Michael Pittman, you know, Corey Davis would have been one that I would have absolutely targeted, maybe Jarvis Landry. But again, I'm not trading any of those guys for a future first. You know, Rager's in the range, Brandon Cooks is in the range. So again, that's kind of the players that I'm giving up. I am giving up some immediate production, at least in my mind. But I'm getting the chance for another high-end asset. So everyone in the chat was like, you do it. Again, this is one of those ones where I think it's a hard decision because I'm looking at the board and I'm like, hey, I can get like guys that I really kind of like in this range. But we're playing the long game, right? We're playing the long game. And you know, it's funny because if you do this deal and does this deal come available to you if you don't take Brady? If you're like, all right, I'm going to do a long-term build, you know, does this not come about, right? And so then all of a sudden I'm sort of sitting in this range taking these guys and I'm like, all right, like, hey, I got some competitive pieces. You know, it's just, does it, I don't have a high-end quarterback to sort of help me out with it, you know? So it's an interesting, you know, if I went the other way, would it have happened this way? Who knows? But yeah, it was an interesting opportunity. So I figured I'd give it a shot. And now I got four future firsts. Again, I'm heavy on seconds. So I've got one extra second. So again, so at this point now I have holes at probably running back. Realistically, I got a hole at running back one. I think that's really where the hole is. Miles Sanders fits in more as a running back two. Davis is sort of the running back three arc. I don't have a elite wide receiver one in dynasty. But I probably got a wide receiver one fringe two with Woods. I've got a 2/3 fringe with Anderson. So again, maybe I'm down a peg on both of those. And that's kind of where I'm looking at again. So now maybe I go bargain shopping, you know, is if I need a shot in the arm, is a guy like Michael Thomas available to me in the season? You know, can I trade a couple of seconds for Mike Evans if I need to fix something, something like that? You know, there's these options that are there. You know, can I trade a second for Tyler Lockett? Can I do all these things? Like, I sort of have these in front of me. Is this the way my team's going to look at the end of the season? Probably not. One way or another, it's probably not going to look the same. So that's sort of what it left me with. And I said, okay, I'll be patient. Like, I can play the long game on these people and, you know, let them sort of error into making me really profitable in this league. So 12th, so 11th, 12th, and 13th round goes by. 14th round comes around and I'm like, all right, I'm itching for a wide receiver. And so Brian Edwards had gone off. You know, some of the guys I really like had gone off. So that was unfortunate. It comes to me at 14:07 and it's Hunter Henry. And I'm like, man, you know, listen, Hunter Henry was tight end 10 last year. I get that people don't like the New England landing spot. But again, he's going behind Gerald Everett, who I actually like. He's going behind Anthony Firkser, who, again, I like them, but no. Blake Jarwin, Adam Trautman, Pat Freiermuth. Like, you know, I just think I'm not even a huge Hunter Henry fan. But knowing what we know in terms of density and hit rates on some of these developmental guys, like, give me Hunter Henry. Like, they paid a lot of money for him. Like, probably going to use him. And even if it's not necessarily a lead upside, again, this is a flex play for me. Again, I'm building the roster different. I'm playing the long game, but we're going to try and steal some efficiency. So I might start three tight ends every week. But I'm sort of, it's a buried efficiency that I think we're going to exploit. And then I get into the 15th round, and this is where I am at this point. And I said, listen, there's a one guy left here that I feel really confident in from a week-to-week basis. Give me Cole Beasley. And, you know, again, is he a long-term build for me? Nope. But does he give me options right now? Yep. Am I going to take a wide receiver here that's going to give me long-term upside? No, probably not. Like, it's Marvin Jones, it's him, you know, like Paris Campbell's in the range. I said, give me Cole Beasley because I know he's got wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 in his range of outcomes. He's a productive, usable starter for me on a weekly basis. He's a plug-and-play guy from this range. Again, even if he doesn't hit wide receiver 20, he's going to really help me out in terms of from this range where I'm stuck with a wide receiver 3. He's going to give me the options to basically, you know, to be able to, I think, contend this year, which is crazy to say given my build. So, again, stealing positional efficiencies, we have Mark Andrews, Noah Fant, Evan Ingram, and Hunter Henry. Those are probably going to fill out my flexes, which is nice because I don't have any other players inside the 15th round to play in the flex at present. Robert Woods, Robbie Anderson, Cole Beasley going to head up my wide receiver core. Again, I think there's a couple-year window for these guys. We'll see with Beasley. But I think there's, you know, I think Robbie Anderson's underrated. Wide receiver 37 for a guy that in non-touchdown scoring last year was wide receiver 9. That's a really a high floor scenario. I know there's questions and concerns about Darnold. I don't think Teddy Bridgewater's like significantly better. And I think Anderson could end up getting paid again. So I don't think he's going anywhere. You know, over the next couple of years, it gives me options. Again, and one of the ways I am continuously building my wide receiving cores, I'm just taking the cheaper guys, right? So I'm looking at these first and I'm saying, okay, well, I got a couple seconds next year. And, you know, if I need to build it out, like, hey, who's next year's Brandon Ayuk? Who's next year's falling pedigree guy? You know, who's next year's Bateman was a good example this year. Or, you know, even if I want to go second round, which I don't typically love to do, like Rondale Moore or Elijah Moore, like those guys are going to be available in that second round. And again, if I take a couple of shots on those guys each year, or maybe one shot on one of those guys each year, either a falling round one guy or a day two guy I really like, I've got an extra pick to do it with. And, you know, and that's not to say I can't trade for a long-term wide receiver with one of those picks, because I probably can end up doing that. right? Like I can probably figure out a way over the long term in 2022, whether that's to fill a 2022 need or whether it's to fill a really long term need, I can fill that with those picks, right? And that's probably not even selecting with them. So that's really the angle on this. Again, it gives me ultimate flexibility. I think the outcomes that I need to sort of be wary of, again, I'm very vulnerable to injuries, undoubtedly. And at this point, I'm going to need to go on the thrift market for some wide receiver help, some one injury away guys I need to be very aggressive on at the running back position, just because like a lot of them have gone already. So I've sort of been out of the range of taking them. So you're looking at guys like Zach Moss are off, Gus Edwards is off, Connor's off the board, Jamal Williams is off the board, Madison's gone. You know, so all those guys are gone, but I think I can get, you know, I can snag Cole Kmet. I can snag Corey Kmet. I can snag you know, some of these other guys down the dial a little bit further, and just be willing to, you know, just be willing to make the same bet even though it's less attractive. So taking Kadre Allison, taking Samaje Perine. You know, heck, I could even take a guy like, you know, Philip Lindsay, for example, might have those outcomes. Or, you know, we're going to hit on Xavier Jones, Justin Jackson, Darrell Williams. You know, it's not going to be some of the richer guys. I can't afford that at this point, but I can still be in volume of exposing myself to 6 to 8 of these backup spots. Again, I just need a couple weeks here, a couple weeks there, one start here, one start there, and either they're flip opportunities or they're in-season production opportunities for me. So that's the build. Again, unique, different, not something I necessarily started out to do, but be flexible and be open to it. Again, these late startups I think are pretty valuable. So that'll pretty much do it. That'll probably be the last startup draft build that I do this year. You know, we'll see. Maybe we get another late one in. I kind of like these August ones. I think they're pretty valuable. So we'll see what happens, but if you're still doing them or if you're thinking about jumping in, get in. I think you can get some good stuff done. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.